We are continuing our focus, our discussion on tefillah. We're going to introduce a new sefer tonight. The sefer is called Sha'arim B'Tefillah, which means gates in tefillah. We'll have to think about the word tefillah as we go along. Last week we talked about tefillah in terms of aspirations and dreams. Sha'arim B'Tefillah is authored by a rabbinic giant whose name was Rav Shimshon Pinkus. Rav Pinkus was a popular speaker and a rabbi in the south of Israel, and then I think less than 20 years ago he was killed in a terrible car accident. But after he died, many of his tapes were converted into Sfarim, and the Sfarim are very prominent now. But there were three small Sfarim, like this size, that he offered when he was still living. One is called Brachos B'Cheshvan, the other one is Shabbos Malkus, and this one is called Sha'arim B'Tefillah. And there's so much here, Mirtz Hashem, over time, we're going to study different parts of it. Welcome, Sev. Tonight, we're going to study what he calls the Ikar of Tefillah, the main thing of Tefillah, which I think is such a great opportunity for us. And to appreciate this, we need to take a step back, because Rav Pinkus has an entire sefer on Tefillah. There's so much to say. How can we distill Tefillah down to the Ikar, the main thing, which is pretty huge, if you ask me, to understand what the central guts of tefillah are, we've really drilled down to something deep. So I want to think about that. To do that, I want to step back together with you and ask an honest question openly together, having to do with a challenge. I want to just grab a chair, slide over, there's plenty of room. A challenge of tefillah. What are our challenges? Right over here, there's plenty of space. What are our challenges in tefillah? Because, like the Gemara says, tefillah is sar chizuk, and that's why we're having these discussions. I'm hopeful that, not there yet, but maybe next week, and if not next week, maybe the week after, when we've gotten so inspired with tefillah, we're going to start this chabura with a niggun. So don't worry, you didn't miss it this week. Because we didn't start yet. We have something to aspire to. But we can't just start just yet. So you didn't miss it. But next week, if somebody comes late, they might miss the niggun. What are some of the challenges when it comes to tefillah?
The monotony of the rootness of it that doesn't speak to
him. It's the same words over and over again. There's very little, certainly in the structure, there's very little innovation. So over time, we're going to have to talk about that. What else is a challenge in tefillah?
Concentration,
focus. You know, the Talmud Yerushalmi describes that one of the Amoraim used to count bricks on the wall.
I count the lights in the ceiling.
Perfect. Could you imagine you're in such good company? You could be in the Yerushalmi. Right? So seriously, if the Amoraim at the times of the Yerushalmi had a hard time counting bricks, had a hard time davening because they were busy counting the bricks on the wall, so Kal Vachomer, Ben Benoshel Kal Vachomer, we whose pants are buzzing like all day, how much more difficult it is. What other challenges do we have?
Not knowing what you're saying.
Not understanding what we're
saying.
Both on the prat level, on the word level. Recently I came across this phrase, I'd probably been saying it for 30 years, Ovdu Eshtonosav. And I said to myself, you have no idea what that means, be honest with yourself. And I'm like, you know what, I really have no idea what that means. Then there's the Bigadol, not knowing. What is this section of tefillah about? What is the tefillah Bigadol about? Last week we spoke about the tefillah HaMasmedes of the neshama, that our inside, our neshama, is always davening. But translating that into an experience is challenging. What else?
You have to disrupt your schedule.
Making physical time, space. Who was the strongest, you could argue, of the Avos? Who was the most intense? Yitzchak, because he was Misakin Tfilas Mincha. So Baruch Hashem, I have an incredible blessing. I learn in a kollel where we stop every day for Mincha. We happen to stop at a very odd time because The school davens mincha at 3:23, so we daven mincha at 3:23. But we have a stoppage of play at mincha time. And no one thinks that it's weird that we stop to daven mincha, because we're all on the same page with that. But if somebody at this table is in the middle of something and it's going to get wintertime, and around here Shkia gets so crazy early, it's mind-boggling, you could be in the middle of a meeting and you say, excuse me, the sun is about to go down, and they say, I don't see any sun, and I don't know what you're talking about with the sun going down, with the praying, like, it's hard. It's taka, very difficult, making the tefillah, making the time for it. I want to put out one other ha'ara. And as we'll see, this may be a deep secret to connecting to tefillah, although it doesn't sound like it at first glance. And that is self-esteem.
As in, who am I to be asking for things? Or?
Maybe, right? Who am I to ask? And what Ari's pointing out is Rav Soloveitchik has a very lengthy development of that, that you need a matir to daven. And that's perhaps, they say in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that's why you have to start every tefillah with Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. They daven, they open the door, so I'm going to get in. But there's another level that we can explore, and some of you know that this is one of my, you know, hang-ups, my love for Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, Dr. Shia Twersky. You know, he's written over 60 books. So I once heard him give a talk. He's amazing. He said, you can boil all my 60 books down to one principle, and that is self-esteem. I'm very into his learning, and there's so much there. And I think that this nekud about self-esteem has a lot to do with our experience of tefillah, big gadol, and it relates to what Rav Pinkus, Zichrono Livracha, is trying to tell us in the Hakdama. So you're going to pick it up here on your page. It's on the left-hand column. It's on page Yud Gimel. So I'm skipping the first section because I wanted to get to this point. The context in which this is written is in the Pirkei Psicha, in the introduction to this volume. The structure of the book is around the 10 different ways, Bruchim Abayim, the 10 different ways that we refer to davening. One, in English, you could say there's davening, there's praying, there's beseeching, there's praising. So in Hebrew, there's asira, there's tefillah, there's rina, there's sa'aka. So that's the big adol where he starts. That's not for tonight. Then in the psicha, in section gimel, you see it starts on the bottom right-hand column. He's talking about the importance of learning davening, meaning growing davening, the same way that a person learns Chumash. We don't learn Chumash today the same way we learned it when we were in first grade. We had to have come a long way from that. Otherwise, we've got a long way to go. So we don't experience davening, ideally, the same way that we did then. Although, by the way, in certain respects, just like there's a certain freshness and a certain openness to learning when we're in first grade, that's something that shouldn't be lost on us. There's also, we ever watch children who daven, and they have that marvelous, wide-eyed, eager experience, that childlike experience of davening, that's something that we should aspire to also. Rav Soloveitchik has that description, this beautiful description about his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. You don't usually associate Rav Chaim Soloveitchik with a kindergartner, but that's what he says, that he had a certain childlike enthusiasm about him. And he uses that in the Hesped for Rav Chaim Heller, who was a colleague of Rav Soloveitchik, was a great gaon from pre-war Europe who came to America, and he said Rav Chaim Heller had that. So there is an element of that, but ultimately we're supposed to grow, we're supposed to develop, we're supposed to become more advanced and more sophisticated. So that's how we're supposed to relate to davening also. Great, that's why we're here. So what are we growing in? What's the yesod? Here he says it. Ikar HaTefillah, left-hand column, second paragraph. The main component, the main focus of tefillah is what? Shehu lahargish, that is, the person is to sense, to feel, she'omed lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the person stands before the Almighty, b'metzias, with reality, u'lahargish kirvaso, and to feel his closeness. That, says Rav Volbi, is the main point of davening. not, he doesn't say the main point of davening is to say every word. The main point of davening is not to think about God. The main point of davening, according to Rav Pinkus, is to feel God. To feel the presence of God. That's the main thing of davening. V'shemetziuso, that his foundness, his presence, v'kirvaso, and his closeness, yizbarach, hein mitzius mamoshis, they are real, practical, concrete realities, lo pachos mikol mitzius pshuta hamu kereslanu, no less than any other reality, which is familiar to us, says the Sharm B'Tfila, Tzorach lezeher gel rav. That needs a lot of practice. It needs a lot of work. And it's really difficult. There is an idea that appears in halacha that expresses this, which we don't often think about. You ever see somebody, they're davening Shmoneh Esrei, they're in this row, and then the person in front of them is finishing the Shmoneh Esrei. So what do? They give the little, if we had, that'll be the next thing, the next great device, is the rear view mirror.
Attached to the tefillin.
Attached to the tefillin. The right, the rear view camera, that when you're ready to back up after the Shmoneh Esrei, you want to know if the guy behind you is still, why do you care if the guy behind you is still davening Shmoneh Esrei?
You don't want to disturb him.
Oh, so you don't want to disturb him. There's an additional concern. What's that? You don't want to invade his space. You don't want to invade his space. What's wrong with invading his space? He's not going to take any offense. The answer is, that's right. When the person is talking to the Rebbe Shlomo Kiviyachol, the halacha treats it as if this is his personal space that he reserved for God. They're having a private conversation. If you put it in reverse and step back without looking, you may be encroaching on somebody's personal space with God. You may be stepping on the Rebbe Shlomo's toes, so to speak. So this idea is not just a theoretical concept in Machshava. It's a reality in Halacha that we all experience all the time when we daven in Shul. That's why we're looking. Because we understand that when the person is in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam, that becomes a reality for them. That's what the real experience of Tefillah is about. And that's a hard thing to do, to acculturate ourselves and to habituate ourselves to getting in that frame of mind. But that's the goal.
But he says, I mean, it's a weird thing, I'm trying to phrase it, that's the ikkar of tefillah.
Right.
If you go to the Kotel and you don't actually daven, you just have a conversation with God, but you feel like God is there. You're not yotzei mincha by doing that.
Oh, so beautiful. However, somebody would say you were yotzei tefillah lemahadrin. And this is something that Ari was alluding to, which is good for a different discussion. We don't have time to talk about it tonight. But tefillah is comprised, maybe next week or a different week, we have to talk about the fixed nature, why it should be, if tefillah is about having an intimate moment of feeling with God, why is it they have to have a sitter?
It's also about the communal responsibility.
Okay, so there's a communal factor. Let's say you're davening alone. You still need a sitter. Why did they need to make it fixed? So there is a lot to say about that. I'll just give you a regalachas, one way to think about it, and that is the tomato plant mushel.
Okay.
Planted tomatoes?
Not this year.
Not this year. In theory, when you plant tomatoes, what do you need? You need seeds, and what else do you need? The metal grates. You know what I'm talking about? Those steak, those things. Why do you need those?
To hold them up.
Right. Even though tomatoes grow naturally, you want to be sure that they don't grow along the ground and get eaten by the ants. So you give them a scaffolding for them to grow on. Tefillah, like many other things in life, is a hybrid between the scaffolding, that's called a sitter, the text, but the real is the organic. So yes, we have to talk about three times a day and the schedule of, you start with Shevach and then you have Bakash, and then you have Hodah. But what you're talking about, that's mamish tefillah. Person who goes to the Kotel, and they're whispering. Who has the trophy for greatest tefillah ever? Bingo. And what did Chana do? Chana daven didn't. I don't know if she probably daven shachris already. She daven mincha. I don't know if she daven ma'ariv. She came and she says, "Ribono Shalom, you are here, and I'm going to talk to you." And part of the turning point in the story of Chana is what, when the husband Elkanah was a big tzaddik, when he says to her, "Oh, Chanala, aren't I good enough like 10 children?" So you know what she says instantly in her mind, which is longer than we have time for tonight. She says, "You don't understand me." And at that point, she realizes there is no one in the world who will understand her except, right, the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that is the ultimate tefillah, because she finally looks the Ribbono Shel Olam in the eye and says, "God, we have to have a conversation because I have no one else to talk to. I talked to the guy who I live with, and he's totally zoned out. He is not, not on the same page." So that's why that's the Ikar model of tefillah. She basically comes to the Kotel and she says, I have to pour out my heart. And Eli never saw anyone like that. Mm-hmm. Never. Never saw anyone like that. So that's why he was totally confused. The kind of davening that she exhibited there was mamish. It was an experience of that she was standing before the Ribbono Shel Olam and just let it all out.
So when Chassidus, started with, the whole concept of having hispodidus and everything like that, is that because we don't really, in those fixed, tefillahs, we don't do a good enough job in those prayers to really let it all out and have that time to do that.
So what Yoni is alluding to is that in many, not all, but many areas, corners of Chassidus and Chassidim emphasize hispodidus, which is a silent, planned conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And part of that might be because that there is a compensation for something in tefillah, or part of that may be tefillah training. That the more we get comfortable with the idea of having a conversation with God, the more our tefillah becomes a conversation with God, and vice versa. Then it's a synergy. I'm talking to God during tefillah, so I can talk to him while I'm sitting in traffic or I'm about to go to sleep, and my wife is sleeping, and everybody's sleeping, and before I go to sleep, I have a 2-minute conversation with God. We're going to have a 2-minute conversation. So in those days, they would go out to the forest or other places, but hispodidus could be done anywhere. But the main institution of tefillah, says Rav Pinkus, is the feeling. And he says it requires a lot of work. Third line, chelek mitchushaso hativis, until it becomes natural. V'chein shar hergele hanefesh, just like other natural tendencies, hayisodiyim b'tfila humavuram b'silas yisharim, just like other natural tendencies and fundamentals that are part and parcel of our tefillah, and then he quotes a long section from Mesilas Yesharim. Just skip down 2 lines to Ha'echad. What is one key principle of life? And we don't often enough talk about this. Mesilas Yesharim is all about reviewing things that we should talk about all the time, but we don't. Shehu omeid mamish lefnei haborim. I'm on 3-6 lines down. That he is literally standing before God. The challenge is that we don't see God. He is eino nire, like Chazal tell us, but we are trying to get to the place where we feel that we're constantly interacting with God. Setting aside the question about hashkacha pratis, how much hashkacha pratis does a person have? Do we believe everything that happens to a person is hashkacha pratis? Only certain people have hashkacha pratis. That's not the point. Irrespective of whether what's happening to me because of that guy who stalled on the Edens in front of me, whether that's hashkacha pratis or not, who do I have that conversation with now? I see Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm stuck behind a guy at the Edens. My flight from Midway is in 45 minutes. I don't know what to do about this. So the conversation happens with God on an ongoing basis. It's real. I'm going back and forth with him. And this is one of the most difficult things that a person has to fix in their heart. It's really very difficult. You ask a person to come up with an image of God, you get a headache from doing that. You know, maybe I'm not a philosopher, so I don't find that a lot of fun. There's some people who get paid for a living to do that. But I find it's very confounding. You know, what does it mean? How do we grasp that? So everybody's going to find their way of connecting. So the Rambam talks about Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, different aspects, whether it's nature or it's Torah or it's a tradition, whatever it's your connection is going to be, making that into a real reality before our eyes. That's a challenge in Yadas, and that challenge is sharpened with the experience of Tefillah. But perhaps in this light, we can understand why you could argue that a central challenge to tefillah is self-esteem. So I once heard this ha'ara from Rav Moshe Weinberger in a shir. It was a terrific ha'ara. It was mamish. I felt like it was super spot on. He says, if you ask people, do they believe in God? So everybody would say, yeah. You know, around this table, we took a survey. Everybody believed in God. Do you believe in tefillah? Of course we believe in tefillah. It's one of the Ekronos of Yadus. The Ribbono Shel Olam is listening to us. He doesn't always respond to us. It doesn't say he is an one tefillah. It says he is a Shomea tefillah. Shomea tefillah defa kabasa yavo. So what's the challenge? It says the challenge is that we don't believe in ourselves. So who am I? The Ribbono Shel Olam, God, is worrying about how many billion people are in the world? 7 billion people. And some of those of his creations, mamish, are in very, very bad straits. There are a lot of tsaras out there, a lot of tsar, a lot of difficulty. So the Ribbono Shel Olam has a lot to deal with. He's got a lot on his plate. That's what we're thinking in our mind. And we're thinking, do I really matter? Of all the people that I could even imagine in my circle of imagination, how important can I be? Does the Ribbono Shel Olam really actually listen and pay attention to what I'm talking about, which could be as minuscule as the traffic on the Kennedy, which is not an inappropriate thing to pray for, especially if you're really late for your flight, right? That question, I shouldn't speak for anybody else, but we can't always confidently, can we always confidently answer that in the affirmative? Who are we? So sometimes the little voice says, you know what, you should daven, but it's not that God is actually listening to you to pay attention to what's going on in your life, because who are you? It's not a chsarn in the emuna in God, because God is omnipotent. So God can actually taka. He's not limited. He doesn't need to devote time to each one of the 7 billion people in the world. He can have time because the Ribbono Shel Olam is or ain sof. That's not the problem, perhaps. The problem is for us to really feel that we're talking to God, it means to feel like we're actually talking to God and that God cares what we have to say. And that is yesod in Yiddish and Jewish self-esteem. That the precursor to this ikar and tefillah is to feel that we are chashiv enough, that our neshama is worthy to stand before God and have that conversation. Because if we don't take ourselves seriously in tefillah, so we're not going to take the whole experience seriously. If we don't feel that we're worthy to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He really actually cares about us. He cares about every individual on a prat level. And that when there is somebody who is ill and that I daven for them, my 2 cents coming from me, a speck of nothing, sheba nothing, matters to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That my mincha on a Monday afternoon really does matter to him. And we can talk about, which is not going to be tonight, but for another time, please God, we should be well, why we daven, the bigger why that Meir was alluding to before. Well, if God knows what we need, so why do we need to ask for it? So there are several approaches to that. Also an important topic for one time. But whatever the answer is going to be to that, that my davening actually addresses that. That I actually matter to the Ribono Shel Olam. That I'm a somebody. Tefillah, the exercise in tefillah, when it's done correctly, that experience of tefillah should be the most amazing chizuk for a person. A person shouldn't walk away from tefillah feeling like 2 cents. A person should walk away from tefillah feeling like, I'm taka a somebody. The Ribono Shel Olam thinks that I'm worth listening to. He's going to listen to what I have to say, even if my needs are, you know, on a grand scheme of things that are going on in the world, not so important. You know, maybe it's not the biggest thing. But not only does the Ribono Shel Olam pay attention, he's actually looking forward to it, so to speak. Whatever that, I don't know what that means. I never had that insight, not a prophet. But the Ribono Shel Olam actually appreciates the fact that I pick up the phone and reach out to him. Because when this is true from a hargasha standpoint, that we're standing before God and we have this connection, so we have a relationship. So everybody likes it when somebody we have a relationship with reaches out to them. And even if it's a text message, people appreciate it, no? Don't we appreciate it when somebody who we want, that we should matter to them, sends us a text message that says, Taka, we matter. So that means that mincha could take, I'm not saying I recommend this, but on occasion, maybe mincha could take 7 minutes, especially if you're davening b'yechidus in an office, it could take even less than 7 minutes. And if you're chassidus, you don't say tachanun in mincha. So by the time you're all said and done, but those 5 minutes, the Ribono Shel Olam kivyachol waits for those 5 minutes. Because what you're saying to him is, you're real, you're part of my life, but that all comes from that self-esteem. Feeling that
myself personally,
yeah,
is that if you're not getting answered, whether it be you're stuck in traffic or with Fula,
yeah,
then I don't know that the connection is really, I mean, I understand in theory the connection is there, but again, speaking, if somebody's right. sick and you're diving for this person for 2 or 3 years, and that person, and it's not you, you know, the claw to speak is diving for this person, and that person passes away. So at some point, yes, I know in theory we're supposed to feel as if Hashem is there, but if the answer is he listening to us, yes. But is he answering us? No. And again, I don't know what that means. Maybe he did answer us, and, you know, that person passed away somehow. Again, that I can't answer, but just on a simple level, you know, you ask for something and you don't get it, whether it be for 6 months, a year, 5 years, that connection sometimes gets lost.
So that is definitely one of, I would say that's one of the most difficult challenges in tefillah. That's one that really gnaws at people, at us. It makes us struggle.
If we always got what we wanted, it wouldn't be tefillah.
Okay, great. So now, so there is the validity of that, and then there are the answers. So, exactly. Not only that, but there are many times that my kids ask me for things that I say no. So what Dov was talking about, and the truth is, I should probably make a list of topics that we should cover because I'm going to forget them by the time we finish. But this is a big yisod that needs to be dealt with in davening. And maybe you'll excuse me for quoting him in the shiur, but Garth Brooks captures this yisod. And it's not Stam Garth Brooks, because years ago when I went to talk to Rav Schechter once about a program that I was running, I was involved in this teen program, and I told him that I was going to use this Garth Brooks song, and I explained the song to him. He started to cry because he told me that the Rav told them the same yisod as Garth Brooks, basically. Garth Brooks has a song. How many times do you get the Rav and Garth Brooks in the same sentence?
Same yisod.
He has a song called Unanswered Prayers. But it's hard. One of the challenges of tefillah is, yes, the Ribono Shel Olam might be listening, but how long can you talk to someone who doesn't answer you? So that is a hard thing to do. That's part one of the challenges. So you have to figure out, what does it mean that the Ribono Shel Olam is listening? How do you define listening? What is, right?
Right. I mean, I certainly understand that what I feel I need and what Hashem feels I need are two completely different things.
Right.
And what I think is good and what Hashem thinks are good are, again, are two different things. But on the most simplistic level,
sure, it makes it difficult
when we're asking.
We're asking for things, and then we don't get it.
Right.
So, and so, some of those components are what Chaim was alluding to is about. I'll tell you one very, very powerful line, very, very powerful on this Nakuda, summarizing your point. I don't know how many of us remember the situation with Nachshon Waxman, Hashem Yikom Damo. So I once saw an amazing sefer. The sefer was about Nachshon Waxman, his life, and they interviewed people. And in the back, they interviewed his friends. They had a reporter who went to the Shiva house, and his close chaverim, Yedidim, were sitting outside, just stayed there. So one of them was approached by a reporter, and the reporter said to him, you know, Esther Waxman, she had thousands and thousands of people light Shabbos candles that Friday night. Thousands and thousands of people came to the Kotel and prayed for him. And what happened? So this chaver of his gave a very profound answer. This is what Chaim was alluding to. He said, Tfilah zelo kaspomat. Tfilah is not an ATM machine. Zelo kaspomat. It's not that you put in the card and you get back the cash. That was his whole line to this reporter. So there's much more to say about that, but that is one of the challenges. The fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not nearer, is not seen, we can't see him. The fact that he doesn't give us a response, a visible, constant response. The fact that sometimes we, both as Yechidim and as a Klal, we ask for things, and then the answer is no. And sometimes the things that we ask for, we think are in line with his ratzon, kiviyachol. You know, how many people daven, and as somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about and researching and learning about the Holocaust, this is something that is constantly, you know, how I saw pictures, billboards, of Zmanim times in Shtiblach in the Lodz ghetto, Mamish, where they made special Mishaberachs for people who had been deported. Yiskers, Yiratzons for people who had been deported. How many of those tefillos were mamish, real tefillos? So there are certain questions that go unanswered. And so that is a challenge to tefillah. So the question then becomes, so what do we do with that? And how do we approach tefillah? And how do we navigate tefillah despite those challenges? But coming back to where we started, and with this we'll conclude, to me it seems that we need to build our self-esteem muscles, our Yiddish self-esteem muscles, that our neshamas are a chelek elokam imal, that they matter to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and our channel, that when we talk to him, our channel is open. And that he wants to know what's going on in our life, even though he knows it already. Don't think he does know it. But he wants to know what our relationship is like, and what our frustrations are, and what our successes are, and how we're feeling, and all that. That frame, the more we prepare for it by talking about it and thinking about it and exercising these tefillah muscles, will get us into the frame of mind that the Ribbono Shel Olam is a metzius mamashus right in front of us as we daven. And in that spirit, let's daven up. What's that?